Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Say, is your vehicle bogged down with pesky issues? Is your spark plug lacking vigor? Your crankcase cracked? Well, if so, you'll want to listen today, because Gordon Fricke is back with his automotive repair and maintenance advice. He is an expert on this stuff and always a popular guest on this program. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Got a car question? Call us, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon Fricke, your car calls, coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff on the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. Today is none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service game for more than 30 years. If you have a question, this is the guy to talk to. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, sir, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be here.
Well, you know, you had a question from somebody in the front office as you walked in, and it sparked a terrible memory I had from early this morning when my wife admonished me sternly about leaving on my windshield wipers.
Yes.
The night, you know, I'll turn the car off,
yep,
they'll be on, and then it snows and the windshield wipers, bad things can happen, right?
It's so easy to do because you come home, maybe they're on intermittent, and you didn't even, at the time when you shut the car, realize, oh my God, the wipers are still on. Freezes, or you get heavy, wet snow in the morning, you turn the car on, the wipers are trying to move.
Yeah.
And what we see happening quite often is the shafts where the wiper arms are bolted down will strip. But that's not the worst thing in the world, because the wiper arm is made out of soft aluminum, and it's made to break away in that event so it doesn't destroy the wiper transmission. But I just replaced the wiper transmission on a vehicle yesterday, because the linkage had popped apart, and there was a weakness in this particular design, but we see that quite a bit. They will fall apart.
And is a wiper motor transmission expensive to fix?
It can be. This particular vehicle, the unit was $130 bucks.
Yeah.
Solid hour to change it with tax.
So that's a few hundred bucks.
Yeah.
It's not what you want to do. So turn them off.
If you think of it, yes.
Fair enough. All right. Well, I'll tell my wife that you were correct. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The lines, my gosh, they're loading up already. Let's go to Sandy in Rotterdam. Sandy, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. Geez, this is a miracle. It's the first one.
You're on. Go ahead.
I've called before and never got on. Anyway, I have a 2004 Dodge Dakota V6 pickup truck. It's got about 90,000 miles on it. The weirdest thing happens with it. Sometimes if I sit with it idling for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, if I'm stuck in traffic or something, if I turn it off, it won't turn back on. It just goes wah, 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 wah. But it acts like it's heating up. You kind of get an odor, but none of the gauges in the truck say that it's overheating.
Hey, Sandy, before he answers, can you make that sound again?
The wah, 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 wah?
Very good. Okay, yeah. Gordon.
Wah, 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 wah.
So that sound effect, it sounds to me like when you go to restart it, it's cranking and cranking and cranking and cranking and cranking, but it doesn't fire up right away. And how long have you had it shut off before you attempt to restart it and it goes through that long cranking, like minutes or hours?
Minutes.
Yep.
If I wait a half hour, it starts again with no issue.
Yeah. What happens in a lot of cases like that is it's called heat soak. And if you shut a fully warmed up engine off, and the hotter the weather, the worse it is, dead hot summer, shut the vehicle off. Let's say you were on the thruway and you're going 70 miles an hour and you pull into the rest area for 5 minutes, come back out. That's not uncommon to experience that. And there used to be a term called vapor lock years and years ago. And it's along those similar lines. But what's happening there is more than likely on your vehicle, the fuel injector or injectors are dribbling down when the engine's off and losing fuel pressure, and at the same time partially flooding the engine. So a ton of cranking occurs, so the fuel pressure gets back up to where it should be, and the excessive fuel gets pushed through the engine, and you're starting up and running. Usually, the customer will say it runs ragged for 30 seconds or so, and then it straightens out. Is that your case?
Once in a while, that will do that, but not every time.
Yeah.
It depends on if I try to start it too soon.
Right.
If I try to start it too soon, it does do that.
Yep. So what
the first time I experienced this was I was in the Carolinas last summer, and I thought I was stranded.
Yeah. Oh.
I wasn't.
So often.
And it was 100 degrees.
Out. Yes. It's the hotter it is, the worse it is, the more often it happens.
Yeah.
So this is what I would do. I would give it a treatment of a very strong and quality fuel injection treatment in the gas tank. And I know we don't usually say brand names, but this particular brand is a chemical that Chevron developed called Tecron. And it's a very good product. And buy a 20-ounce bottle, read the label, use it the way it is supposed to be used. And you can follow up with another one if you got a lot of deposit issues, or you can go with 12 ounces spread out in between, let's say, every couple of gas tanks. Don't overuse it, but I would try that first.
All right, Sandy, thank you very much for the call. Can you use Seafoam in a pickle?
Yeah, Seafoam is a good product. It's it's made to do a few more things than the Tecron. It's a fuel stabilizer. It also dries up excess moisture. It does clean the injectors, and it is a lubricant. So it is good stuff, but it doesn't do the cleanup of the injectors
right. And
the deposits, I don't think.
It's great on my snowblower. I know that.
You can put it in anything.
Yeah.
All engines.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest today. It's automotive maintenance and repair at Dennis in Del Mar. Dennis.
Yes, I got three questions for Gordon.
Okay.
The first is, what is the difference between a generator and an alternator?
Okay, that's right. One.
So they both generate electricity by being turned by a pulley or a chain or some other mechanism. The generator produces DC current. The alternator produces AC current. And the alternator's AC current gets turned back into DC current for automotive use by some diodes. So they both generate electricity. You can call them both a generator.
Why, though? Now, I know you've answered this question before, but somewhere in the 60s or 70s, they went from generators to alternators.
Yep.
If it's going back to DC current anyway, why
Great question. Have
to convert it to AC?
Right. Well, I go through all that work.
Right.
So the generator is not very efficient. It doesn't do much at low RPMs. The alternator, because it's making AC current, produces more and better current at lower RPMs. It's a more stable device, so they decided we'll rectify it with diodes and turn it back into DC, and you got a better charging system.
All right, what's your second question, Dennis?
The second question is, what's the difference between a timing belt and a timing chain?
Okay, yeah. The belt is on the outside of the engine, and it's made of rubber and fiber and a whole bunch of other things, and it's toothed, so it stays in time, so all the pulleys turn at the exact same speed, where the timing chain is inside the engine, bathed in oil. They both do the same function, though. They turn the camshaft, basically.
And are most vehicles now set with timing chains?
Yes. Originally, you had mostly all chains. Then they went over at cam engines, and they were mostly all toothed belts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the makers went back to an internal chain, even with overhead cam, to put everything inside the oil. And I thought that was the greatest thing in the world, until now we're seeing so many cam chain wear and guide issues.
That's interesting. Now, I always heard, okay, if you got a timing belt, you got to watch it. 80,000, yes. 100,000 miles, yep. That thing's got to be switched. And then I heard, okay, timing change, you don't have to worry about them.
Correct. That was the thought, that they could be almost lasting as long as the engine.
Yeah.
But if the oil is not changed very regularly and kept very clean with quality oil and filters, and the components aren't of top quality, the chain is going to wear, stretch, possibly break, and blow the engine to smithereens.
Oh, tremendous. All right, last question, Dennis, then we have to take a break.
Last question is, the spacer on an air gun, why would it deliver a different amount of torque depending on the size of the steel rod?
Wow.
You're talking about an air wrench to tighten up nuts and bolts?
Yeah, for lug nuts.
Yep, and you're talking about the length of the... You're talking about the adapter between the socket and the wrench?
Yeah. Yes, they're different sizes, different diameters.
Yeah, so they will offer... Yes, what they do is those are called torque sticks, and the thinner ones bend easier than the thicker ones, and when they bend, the hammering of the air wrench is taken up by that torque stick, and it tends to stop roughly at the set torque, so... Thinner is lower torque, thicker is higher torque.
All right, that's it. We'll have to take a break, Dennis. All right, everybody out there, hold your torque sticks. We'll be right back. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Gordon Fricke, our guest today, automotive maintenance and repair. The lines are officially full. If you hear somebody hang up, that would be the best time to call. Gordon, one email here, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one came in from Lisa in Lee. We have a 1999 VW Eurovan. That's right up your alley, yeah. Right? It leaks oil in our driveway. We've asked our mechanic numerous times to fix it, but it still leaks. Is there an additive or something that might help?
Well, it may be too far beyond that. There are some additives that go in the oil that will help swell up the seals and kind of revitalize them. And to some degree, they can work. Probably, though, something in there needs to be looked at. And it could be a variety of things, but that Eurovan, if that has a 5-cylinder engine, it's common to leak from the oil filter adapter that the oil filter connects to that then bolts to the engine. There's O-ring seals in there, and they get hard after all those years and hot cold cycles, and they'll leak a lot of oil.
That ancient VW van in your shop, was from 60-something?
66.
Okay. Do you run that thing? Otherwise, that must have some terrible, where things just dry out.
I don't think it's been started in about... 5 or 6 years, and shame on me.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to get in and out of there, and it's such a, it's turned into an antique, a collectible piece, and now I'm afraid to drive it.
Well, it's beautiful, my gosh. Do you let people in, walk around?
People see that, spot it, turn around, come back. Almost every day, somebody pops in and drives Laura crazy. And I've said this 100 times, I should put a plaque up there that tells the vehicle, the previous owner, its life, the mileage, the engine, because then all the quick and easy answers would be there.
And then you don't have to talk to anybody.
Well, they would answer the questions because they just want to take a picture of it and talk about how their father or mother or grandparents had one, and it was really
cool.
Yeah,
my uncle had one.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Any offers where someone says, all right, I'll give you 40 grand for this right now, Gordon?
Some people are really aware of the value of those things, and they, you know— and they asked me if it's for sale, and I said, you know, it will be. It will be.
Well, if you let it sit that long, you're going to have to replace a lot of stuff to sell it. I hope you know a mechanic. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Ken and Troy. Ken.
Hi there. It's Kim.
Kim,
I'm
sorry.
I'm in a 2011 Subaru Outback with 234,000 miles on it. When I turn the ignition off on a hot day, or really any day, it sounds like there's a little rodent in my dashboard behind the wheel typing on a little rodent-sized typewriter. And I don't know what that is. And is it in any way connected to my intermittent loss of air conditioning?
Huh.
It's possible because the climate controls are electronic. And when you turn the dial, it sends a signal to move a motor that moves a flap. And those flaps have little gears. And it could be that one of those flaps is getting sticky or is stuck. And that actuator motor is clicking. And I hear that a lot on different cars. And sometimes when you first start them, you'll hear a tick, 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 tick for, I don't know, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
You can also hear the same ticking when you shut the car off because the flap is trying to return back to the set position that it never achieved. So the answer to your question is very likely.
So should I fix it? 234,000 miles?
It's up to you. If your heat and AC come out where they should or if the system is working okay for you, you don't really have to fix it.
Hmm.
So yeah, you don't need to.
It waits until the hottest day and then it stops working.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. Well, watch the long-range weather and just play it by ear.
All right, Kim, thanks for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. We go over to Patrick in LaGrangeville. Patrick.
Hey, shout-out to you, Ray. I know that Joe's recovering from his injuries. I hope that you're recovering from filling in for him for all this time.
I'm starting to feel better, yes. It'll be all right in a couple of months. Yeah, thank you for that.
Anyway, You're Noah's snark in this biblical story. Anyway, I have a 2006 Kia Sedona, and I've been having intermittent problems with it starting. And first of all, to try to find the starter is nearly impossible. But I don't believe that it's the starter. Could it be something as simple as a weak battery? Because every day, if I'm sleeping overnight and I go out in the morning, it starts. But sometimes I drive just a couple of miles and turn it off and it won't start, and then I go pushing things around and thinking that I'm making some kind of a difference, and about 20 minutes later it fires up and the starter sounds strong.
Yeah. So when it fails to start, you turn the key and there's silence. You don't hear any grinding or noises or cranking sounds or clicking or anything?
Well, occasionally I hear a groan, but All the lights work and the radio and everything, but they take much less power than the starter, clearly.
Right. So those intermittent problems are the toughest because you really need to reproduce the problem to solve it 100%. But if you can find the starter, the little wire that's connected to the solenoid tends to get corroded on vehicles that age, and it will give you an intermittent no crank. And sometimes it's as simple as cleaning it or putting a new terminal end on there and reconnecting it and all as well. You could have a beginning of a failing starter. Again, be nice to test it when it's failed to be 100% sure. Mm. But yeah, that's where you could go.
Well, then, right. The thing is, though, that, again, I went on every YouTube video and I asked. I have a friend who owns a shop and stuff. Finding that starter is near impossible.
Wow, why?
So, because it's underneath, I mean, you nearly have to take the front of the vehicle off.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it meant it was tough to find a replacement part. You can still get the replacement parts,
oh,
right?
Oh, no, I can find a starter. No, the local junkyard's got one.
Gotcha.
And I had a hard enough time replacing the power steering pump, but I did that successfully. But finding the starter itself physically in the vehicle is like a Houdini routine.
Yep. Some vehicles, we have to take the intake manifold off of the car to get to the starter, which is a lot
like
of work.
Terrible design, you know?
Too much compacting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Too much. Anyway. Little space.
Thank you anyway. And cheers. I won't hold up the lines. You guys are great. Love you. Be well. Happy Valentine's Day.
All right. Same to you. Thanks, Patrick. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest today on Vox Pop. Boy, he's a popular guest. Jim, who's on the thruway, you're on.
Yeah, hey, gentlemen. My son just got his first, what do they call this, a hobby car, I guess. But he's got a 2002 Subaru WRX, kind of his dream car. Gone through most of the things to get around the road. We went through a couple weeks. It was driving well. And then... the air intake comes down into the passenger side front fender, oddly enough. And there's a plastic piece that's supposed to snap back in there, and I didn't put it back up. It's not his fault. I didn't do it. And then we went to go do donuts in the parking lot, like, you know,
yeah,
everybody, you know, you should do.
Sure.
Well, you should, you know. It's just, anyway. And then, so we got a lot of snow up inside that fender. The next day when he tries to drive the thing out of the snowbank, not like parked, he didn't get
right.
Stuff.
No, but I gotcha.
We got snow pulled in on the intake. Well, now there's a knock. It's pretty solid. I've taken apart boxer engines. I got a 73 Super Beetle. You guys have been talking through just about everything I mentioned. But I'm curious about, this seems a lot more complicated four-cylinder thing than the bug engine. So
yeah.
Anyway, thoughts?
So how heavy is the knock? You really think it ingested too much? And
I get that sense. It's a pretty good... Yeah, sorry. It's pretty loud, though.
So if the engine ingests water, it definitely does massive damage. Powdered snow, it would have to have maybe melted in the intake.
It was shoveling it out.
Yeah. Do you think it could have melted in the intake and then it drank some?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So that engine is along the same...
He's fooling with the idea of pulling it out, just taking the top ends off, seeing how the cams are. If they are cans, I don't even know.
Yeah.
And then just hoping it's just a top end loop. I sure as heck don't want to get into opening a block.
If you ingest water, the damage occurs on compression strokes. So the valves are all shut. The piston comes up and it can't go all the way because there's liquid in there that's non-compressible. So it damages the bottom end. So taking the heads off may not show you an awful lot. You may have a connecting rod issue or a bottom end problem. So it could be quite severe.
Yeah, would be.
Yeah. So I'd be careful in doing experimental disassembly unless you want to take it apart and see what you got there.
Well, and that's about where he's at. We've talked about just trying to come up with a pull and drop back in replacement engine.
They're not easy to find for that car, I don't think, are they?
They're really not. They're in. You know, you get into getting close to totaling the vehicle and starting again. But,
oh, I'm sorry.
You may want to take it into a shop and just confirm it, or in your backyard, isolate what cylinder it is by unhooking a fuel injector to each cylinder. Just see if the sound changes.
Hello?
It's possible it's just one or two of them?
Well, yeah, it'd be nice to know which ones took the drink, but again, it's still a big job.
Yeah, I brought it to a Subaru specialist guy who plays with these tuning cars, and, he said new engine, but I'm still just kind of...
Yeah, no, it does big damage. It does. It bends the connecting rods. It does. It's horrible when that happens.
All right, Jim, good luck. Sorry about that. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is the guest, and Ross is in Fort Johnson. Ross.
Hey, Ray. Gordon, glad to talk to you this afternoon.
Sure.
So I've got a 2015 Ford Transit F-350 that, as I accelerate and I go up, when I get to about 65 miles an hour, I get up 65, 70, and then decelerate, it vibrates. It makes a noise like I'm going over a rumble strip and then stops. And if I continue to accelerate, I have no problems above 62, 63 miles an hour, or below 62 or 63, but I've got to get to 65 first, then decelerate, and this happens. And it only happens, like I said, like I'm going over a rumble strip. Help me.
How many miles are on this truck?
108.
Okay. It's not excessive. You know, if you said 308, it would open up a lot of possibilities. But so let's see. That is a... V6 engine up front. It could be driveline related,
so,
and the way to isolate that is bring it up to your 65 miles an hour, and instead of decelerating, put it in neutral and just see if you coast down to, let's say, 55, anything, if there's zero vibration. So then it's time to check the drive shaft, the U-joints, all that kind of stuff.
Right. Well, so a couple months ago, around Thanksgiving, I took it in to have some service done on it, and I had mentioned it, and the vehicle had a recall on it that happened to be in the, I want to say it was a driveline connection, or I can't remember exactly what it was, but I told them about the issue, and they said, well, let's see if this will fix it.
Right.
They also told me that they couldn't drive the vehicle over 65 miles an hour to test it.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to take it out, and they said they weren't allowed to do that.
Right. Couldn't reproduce it.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if they've gone through the drivetrain and nothing is worn or loose, it could be also in the transmission, and it may not be anything detrimental, but it could be a super hard concern to nail down and solve until it either gets worse and never stop. You know, you can reproduce it at will and at slower speeds, but...
And it doesn't happen when you're on the upswing, going to 65?
No. I've got to get to 65 miles an hour and then decelerate. When I hit somewhere between 63 and 62... You know, it's like, brrr, and then stop.
Yeah. So try this. Here's one more quick thing to try. What do you have for gear ranges? Can you go below drive? Can you manually bring that down to like a number 3 or 4 or something below drive?
Yeah. It does have a low gear setting, yes.
So take it out of drive. Go in whatever your next lower range is, and don't bring it up to 65.
You don't want to go 65.
Well,
your
engine speed is going to be higher, but bring it up to the same RPM that you experience at 65. So you may be now going 45 or 50, and let up and see if it does it in that low range or that next speed down. And if it absolutely doesn't, it could be that it's linked to your highest gear in the transmission. Again, not saying it's detrimental or a problem, but you may be able to either reproduce it in lower gears, then bring it to the shop, or you're just going to have to wait till it surfaces.
Right, okay. Because that was the other thing. It's like if I get up above 65, 70, 75, it won't do it.
Yeah.
It's just at that 65...
Yeah,
could be a harmonic. It could be a lot of things happening at that exact speed and RPM.
But you know, thanks Ross for the call. You know, we had a fairly new car not too long ago that we had an issue. Same type of thing at a certain speed, we'd get that, and it was the tires were out of alignment. But what he says about it not happening at that speed on the way up,
yeah,
only on deceleration.
Yes, he's off.
Mitigate against that.
Yeah, so he's off the gas at that time. So the drivetrain now is being stressed in reverse.
Yeah.
It's trying to kind of slow the car down instead of accelerate it.
That's very interesting. Yeah. One more call here before the next break. Lorenzo in Athens, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have an oil consumption question. I have a 2015 and a half Volvo XC60 with about 87,000 miles. Most recent oil change I did myself. I've had the dealer do it and done it myself a few times too. I'm noticing it's using a little bit more oil than it should be. I know it should. It's common for cars to consume about a quart of oil per 1,000 miles or so, I think, is general rule of thumb.
Yeah, yeah, that's it now.
So can there be something internally? It seems to be a little bit sooner than 1,000 miles that I'm adding oil.
Yeah.
The most recent, as I said, was probably about 800 miles ago, and I think I put about a half a quart in recently. Is there something going on internally
yep.
that I should monitor? There's no leaks?
No. Nope. Here's what's happening with engines today. In pursuit of better fuel economy, the car makers designed lower tension piston rings, so the engine spins over more freely, takes up less power to turn the internals of the engine over. And what we're seeing is when these things get some miles on them, and it's not even big miles, it's 40, 50, 60, 70,000 miles, they start to consume oil. And all the manufacturers are very quick to say it's normal to burn a quart 1,000 or even a quart to 750, some of the car makers are saying. It's a lot of consumption by older school drivers like us that are accustomed to not adding much oil.
Yeah.
Right.
Volkswagen and Audi and Subaru and a bunch of them have updated piston and ring assemblies that solve it. It's very expensive to do that. And also your crankcase, your crankcase ventilation system is critical in oil consumption. So whatever Volvo is using, Audi and Volkswagen call it an oil separator crankcase vent.
Can you describe a little the crankcase ventilation?
Yeah, if you just Google it or look it up, it used to be called a PCV valve in the olden days. Now it's a oil separator crankcase ventilation valve, and it does more stuff. And when you add a turbocharged engine, it adds more complexity to it.
All right, we have to take a break. Lorenzo, thanks for the call. Love seeing the pained expression on Zach the engineer's face when there's a phone call that has an anomaly. The number is 800. It's okay, Zach. We're almost done. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we talk automotive maintenance and repair every so often. Today's the day. Terry in Great Barrington. Terry.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I've got a 2014 Honda Pilot with 91,000 miles on it, and the engine light came on a little while back, and it seemed to be in conjunction with the eco mode in the Pilot. And I took it in. The first thing somebody told me to do is get the oil changed in it. Change the oil, and actually the spark plugs are changed out at the same time. And it seemed to rectify the problem. However, since then, I've taken it. I took it on a longer trip. We usually use the vehicle more locally. Took it on a slightly longer trip. The engine light came on along with the traction control light, and I went down to Napa and used their diagnostic tool, and it came up with a code. P3400 was the code, and then thereafter the code or the engine light turned off, and local driving, everything was fine. Eco mode was working, and took another trip a little bit longer, and the engine light came on again. So it seems like it's having some trouble when I'm taking longer trips. It doesn't necessarily have to be on the highway. It's more, more length of time that I'm driving the vehicle,
right?
Over an hour or so. And, I'm ready to bring it into the shop, but I'm wondering, is this a trial and error type of fix, or does that code indicate, what needs to be fixed on it? Or is it kind of like, the code indicates it could be one of five or six things?
Yeah, that's the misconception. The code is not necessarily saying replace XYZ sensor, you'd be all good, never be back again. Gets you in the area of the fault, and that's where you have to do a lot of testing. Is it a PO340?
It's a P3400.
Okay. And is that a camshaft code? Did they give you a description of what it stood for?
No, they did not.
Okay. Is the light on now?
The engine light's on.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So leave the light on. Don't disconnect the battery. Don't have Advance or Napa clear to reset it. But it should go in with the light on so the tech can go in there and read the code. Look at some freeze frame data, maybe get an idea what's going wrong at that time. But it's at the beginning of the diagnostic procedure, and some codes are pretty clear and pretty easy to solve, and others are way more arbitrary. So you should get it checked and see where that's going to lead, because it could be leading to a drivability problem that's going to give you trouble traveling, you know?
I got you. Yeah, I got to say this, the engine runs like a top with the engine light on.
Yeah, with the engine light it shouldn't say check engine, really. It should say check emissions or something like that.
Right.
Because sometimes you wouldn't notice a thing. But we see a ton of carbon buildup and a lot of deposits that I don't if you got a cam code, that may not have anything to do with it, but we see tremendous carbon problems with gasoline. That's why I'm constantly saying put gas additive in very regularly.
Right. All right, Terry, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Perry in Troy. Perry.
Yes, I'm here.
You're on.
Okay, well, listen, I have a 2007 Toyota Camry, and I'm pretty much having the same problem as your previous caller. My check engine light comes on intermittently. I can drive it for a week or so and no problem. Then all of a sudden, the light comes back on. I tried putting seafoam in the gas tank, and that shut the light off for a while, but a week or so later, it come right back on.
Hmm. Have you ever had it scanned to see what the code is?
I did have it scanned once, and they were telling me that it has something to do with the catalytic converter.
Okay. How many miles are on your car, roughly?
156.
Okay. So you probably have a PO420, which is a nasty code in terms of getting the car inspected and a potential catalytic converter becoming depleted, not cleaning the air as much. There are some additives that you can put in your gasoline to clean the sensors and the catalytic converter, which may sharpen it up. So if you go to an auto parts store, ask him for a catalytic converter cleaning additive that goes in the gas tank. It's a big silver bottle. It's not cheap. It's like $30.
Yeah.
But it's very good. Doesn't fix everything, but it certainly can help. So I think I would start there.
Okay. I appreciate your help.
Okay.
Perry, thanks for the call. Our guest today is Gordon Fricke. 800-348-2551 is the number. David in Johnstown. David.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This is a basic question. When I'm stopping, the brakes squeal. And I had taken it into a garage, and the guy said the brake pads are pretty secure. So what do you think that is?
So if your brakes are in good condition.
That's
not
what the guy said.
Not rusty rotors and sticking pads and all that.
What is a rotor?
That's the brake disc. That's what the brake pads squeeze to let you stop. So it's the disc part, the shiny part that you look through the wheel and see. We see a lot of corrosion, rust, and sticking problems creating those noises. And also, just a light braking or intermittent use can cause that. And sometimes it's not a bad idea to take the car out and really work the brakes over. Go down some hills. Don't overheat them or destroy them, but give them a workout, and you may find that you've cleaned up those surfaces and your noises are gone for a while.
Bless your heart. I had the brakes blown out about 6 months ago. There's no connection. I like your idea.
All right. What does that mean, blowing the brakes out? Do you have any idea? No.
What did they do?
Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
Maybe they cleaned.
The lines?
Maybe they cleaned the pads and the brake dust from the area.
Okay.
Unless he blew a brake line on the road, but I don't think that's what he did.
No, he would know that.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's go to David in Saugerties. David.
Hey, Gordon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a transmission question for a 2016 Hyundai Tucson Sport. It comes with a what they call a dual clutch transmission.
Yep.
Which in theory seems great, except all kinds of issues with starting from a dead stop, hesitation, buckling in traffic when going very slowly. Hyundai denies there's any issue with it at all. They say it works as designed, and they couldn't be more wrong. People complaining about it all over the forums online. And I'm wondering if you have any insight.
Well, I've heard that concern on Hyundai dual clutches of that vintage. And I don't know of any in-house remedies or fixes other than sometimes there's programming or a software updates that the computer needs. And yeah. A lot of times a problem will arise and the engineers will figure out a software patch or change to make it operate differently to cover it up or make it better. I would investigate that if they've got anything for you along those.
Say it again?
Yeah, they did two of those. They've done two of those. There were two software updates.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. No change, though.
Have you...
My daughter parked the car.
Have you...
It's scary for her.
Have you called Hyundai directly on their consumer...
I have opened two cases with Hyundai Corporate.
Yeah.
And after discussion and explaining everything and sharing with them all my receipts and all that... They claim that there's no issue. It works as designed. Case closed.
Oh boy.
And suit against them for repairs for people who want to jump on board with that.
Yeah. Have you ever?
I haven't had to pay for any repairs.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Have you had the opportunity to drive another car exactly like yours to see if that's the way it operates?
I have not, but I have watched some videos on YouTube. One person showed a demonstration of his Tucson, same year and everything, coming out of a toll booth, stepped on the gas, RPMs went way up, car wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. It would be interesting to...
Put on the gas, the RPM's sick.
It'd be interesting, and it's not a new car. Is it still in warranty?
It is, for another 9,000 miles.
It'd be nice if you could drive.
Bumper to bumper.
It'd be nice if you could drive another of the same vehicle that the dealer might have in their inventory and just see what it feels like.
Yeah.
But other than that, I can't tell you more than what you've already done.
All right, David, thanks a lot. Now, quickly, before the next call, why a dual clutch and why is it theoretically an advantage over a single clutch?
Well, it's really common now. Most automatics are dual clutches,
really?
And it just allows the transition from gear to be quicker and smoother and less abrupt. Just an evolution of the automatic.
Yeah.
What a lot of car companies are doing is using CVTs, constant variable transmissions, where
yeah.
you don't even feel the shift. It's just a smooth, supposedly, or they want it to be a smooth transition to up to speed, like you don't even feel the shift. Where the dual clutches kind of try to make it easier than the old school where you felt the bang, you know, next gear, shift in the next gear, and boom, I'm in high gear, you know?
There's something comforting about that, though. You know when you're in the right gear.
You know, if you're old school and you drove some muscle cars or some stuff of vintage,
yeah.
you kind of like that a herky-jerky yeah. power feeling, you know?
Exactly. John in Northfield. John, you're on.
Yeah, Gordon, I got a 2007 Toyota Tacoma. And when I shift, so it's an automatic, and when I shift down from, like, drive to 4, 3, and then I get to 2 and the L, the 2 and the L aren't lighting up on the dashboard, and they're not really, it seems like it's not really engaging. The truck drives, but it's like it's in drive, not, like, shifting down, shifting into lower gears.
Mm-hmm.
Any ideas?
So, in other words, you're manually pulling the selector down through all those speeds?
Correct.
Yeah. But when you get to those last two, the light doesn't light up that you're really in that position?
Correct.
Yeah. Did it do that in its earlier life?
No, it didn't.
So you've never seen those illuminate?
Oh, no, they did illuminate early in its earlier
they
life.
Did. They did.
Every once in a while it'll happen now where they will illuminate. Like it just recently, it was shifting very smooth, like everything was working fine.
Yep.
But then it just disappears.
What you should do is get it scanned because that transmission is computerized. It's computer operated.
Yeah.
Yep.
See what's going on there. And the shop can watch the gear position lever and then confirm that the transmission is receiving that correct information. Maybe there's something going on with your mode selector switch and the transmission is not getting the information that you're in those low modes, and that's why it's kind of in limbo.
Hmm.
But it's got to get scanned. It's got to get tested with a diagnostic tool.
John, thank you very much. Over to Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Emily.
Hi. I heard you talking earlier about timing belt versus timing chain. We have always had belts in the past and kept an eye on the miles, and we keep our cars for hundreds of thousands of miles, so we've changed belts a couple times. We now have two cars that I think both of them, I'm sure the Scion, we have a 2010 Scion, 2014 Forester, Subaru Forester, they're both manual transmission. I know the Scion, I think the Forester has a chain, and I'm being told, oh, it's the life of the car. But I heard you say, depending on the components and the quality, and I want to know, how do I know if it is or not, and how do I decide what to do about it if I have to actually do something if I want my car to live
That's
a couple
a great
hundred
question.
Miles.
Big, big topic of controversy, because engineers, automotive engineers, experts, car makers, Porsche comes to mind because they're a super engineering company is what they started out life at, and they do make some cars also, and they race cars, and they know all about engines. And here's the deal. The government is pressuring the car makers to keep the oil in the crankcases as long as possible due to environmental concerns. We all get that.
Right.
The problem is the oil is getting beat to death. It's doing too many things now. It's running turbochargers, it's cooling superchargers, it's running cam actuators, it's acting as a hydraulic fluid. There's not enough.
Well, my mechanic did say you have to change the oil regularly if you want it to last the life of the car.
So what I'm
I would do that anyway.
Yes, what I'm leading up to is the general rule now by engine makers and engineers of high-end companies, car makers, are saying you should do it every 4,000 miles. Now, the manual's going to say every 6, 8, 10, 12, depending on who's making the car. Keeping that oil fresh, clean, and with quality products and filters is going to ensure that your internals are going to last as long as they can. Other than that, there's nothing you can do about it. It's all internal. It's all spinning around in, you know, kind of the abyss of the engine.
All right, Emily, thanks a lot. We only have about 40 seconds here, but Hedy and Wineskill, you're on.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2009 Pontiac Vibe, and I'm shifting, and it makes a knocking sound when I take off in first gear, only in the morning, early morning. And then when the car is warmed up, it doesn't do it no more. It's been a year. I took it to the mechanic. They can't find nothing. The car seems fine, but it's very annoying, and I go real fast into second gear to get rid of the knocking.
All right, we got about 15 seconds here, Gordon.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, so the question is it engine knocking or is it drivetrain knocking? So let's try this. Yeah. The next time,
I think engine.
Tomorrow morning, let the engine warm up for 15 minutes before you drive it and see if it doesn't do it.
Okay.
And if it does, it's probably an engine piston slap or some kind of a noise in the engine.
All right. Well, that's where we will have to leave it. Thank you very much for the call. Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, celebrating 30 years of protecting the land that protects the lake, offering more than 35 miles of trails for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration, lglc.org. At Inquiring Minds Bookstore, New Paltz and Saugerties, announcing the opening of the Vinyl Vault. Buying, selling, and consignments, specializing in jazz and classic rock, inquiringbooks.com. Once again, thanks to Gordon Fricke for being here today. Thank you for listening and for the calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Jim Harrison. Thanks to our producers, Jim Lavoulis and Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh my gosh, it's one of those days. Rocco DeFazio will be joining us for a Food Friday discussion of all things pizza. 2 o'clock. Mark the calendars. Stand by now for the Capital Connection.